start asking yourself where you want to go and make sure that you ask yourself why you want to go there. I don't want to just buy a house on some tropical island because I want to visit there and it sounds like a cool idea. I could rent it out. No, what's your why?
Welcome to Doc Working, the Whole Physician Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jen Barna, and I'm so excited to bring to you today our guest, Brett Riggins, who's going to talk with us about his real estate journey and how he's helping physicians on their journey to building a side hustle that can help them to build strength and security in addition to their medical practice. Brett Riggins is a 20-year veteran of the real estate business whose passion is helping people connect with the life they want. And I know that we're especially interested in that here at Doc Working. And Brett, I'm hoping that you can tell me about your history, how you've ended up in real estate, and tell me a little bit more about how you came to be helping so many physicians.
Hey, great question. First of all, thank you for having me here, Jen. I really appreciate it. And thank you for everybody that's taking the time to listen to the show today. And I know that's the first step. Is just being curious first. And then we're going to talk about taking action. And talking about taking action, how did I start real estate and how did I start this path working with physicians? Because I'm not a physician. It's a great question. I think I started way back when my parents started building a house. I was 7 years old when my parents started building a house. And that journey inflicted many pains and many traumas in my life, but ultimately it started the path of construction for me and design. And that's really where my world took off. I was focused in architectural engineering and construction management, through high school and into college. I played music for a little while. It's kind of turned my college education into the education career, maybe just a little bit different than the path of medicine there, but lengthwise it was the same. Ultimately, it came about. I ended up with basically a relationship with a small design build firm, a closely held family firm. And just what a blessing that was to get into the administrative side, learning the business pieces. And I was introduced to a book called Traction at that point, and went from production quickly into a profit partner in the first 3 years with that business. And like I say, it was a wonderful, wonderful journey. From there, I grew and I started my own design build firm, quickly found my path into real estate at that time. And this is just a whirlwind of time and stuff happening, and ultimately investing in myself at that point, Jen, and surrounding myself with the right people, and created these scenarios that allowed us to scale, my wife and myself, to scale from flipping houses to flipping to hold, and what I call flipping paper. We stopped flipping 2x4s and started flipping paper. And now we're focused solely on integrating, automating, and efficiencies, and being able to share that knowledge and experience with physicians.
Brett, I love talking with you because you have the expertise in this area. And I think for us as physicians, we have expertise in different areas. And it's really,
and I'm thankful for that.
It's really helpful when we can partner with someone who has expertise in a different area and can help us to efficiently take on a side project or a side job that we don't have to really necessarily build an entire career around. But I do wonder, what do you recommend for a physician who might be interested in investing in real estate? What do you recommend that they do to educate themselves to get a sufficient education that they can make educated decisions about what is a safe investment, how to move forward, and of course, I think understanding what those steps are can help us to get past the analysis paralysis that so many of us face when it comes to investing in real estate.
Hey, great question. First of all, I've always, and not only did I say this, but I hear it echoed a lot as well too. And I didn't, nothing that I'm going to say today, Jen, did I create or come up with by myself. These are things that I've just learned from other people through empirical evidence, through experience and years, and pick them up. And now I get to repeat them. So the first thing looking at is mindset. So before we even talk about real estate, talk about investments, what kind, you know, how much time do I have, all that stuff, we have to first focus on mindset and understanding, hey, what does it look like or who do I need to become to be a real estate investor? And then once I start, that's the first thing I want everybody to focus on. And a lot of us may have that capacity, ability, and experience already, or think we do. We can take that then and start taking action and say, okay, how now do I start learning real estate? Well, what is it? First, we'll talk about what kind of real estate are you interested in? And this is going to come down to aligning your values and the time that you have now, the time that you have next year and the year after and 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, thinking of these extra strategies that align with these two things. So when I say values, I'm thinking, you know, some people are okay with a certain class property, a certain class neighborhood. And when I say class, I'm talking about condition, age, the demographics of the tenants, those kinds of things, and making sure that that aligns with the product that you want to push out. Remember, this is not somewhere where you're going to live. I hear a lot of physicians talking about Airbnbs. And I, you know, my wife and I did the same thing. We have several Airbnbs as well, and we stay in them. So it's a little bit different. You know, if I'm going to stay in there, it's a little different. Ultimately, finding this path that aligns, Jen, with the angle that you want to go, the way that you want to exit, and making sure that that's the relative to the time that you have to put into this. So when you have a path decided, whether it is Airbnb, what we call short-term rentals, or it's long-term single-family rentals, or it's multi-families where we're talking about syndications, limited partnerships, general partnerships, sponsorship, those kinds of things. Once you have that direction, now how do we take action? First, you just start talking about it. Let's start talking about it because we all have colleagues, what they call it, the water cooler talk. And I'm sure we all have heard that. I would like to get into real estate, or my buddy's doing this, or I'm doing this. Start engaging those conversations. And then the first step is then expanding your associations. Once you're talking about it, then start surrounding yourself with other people. And I encourage everybody to get outside their sphere of influence. A lot of physicians will associate with physicians. Well, I'm sure you're probably aware that maybe physicians aren't the best real estate investors to learn from in the you know, that perspective. So expanding your associations. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of physicians that are just totally crushing it in real estate. But what I say is don't limit yourself to only physicians when you are expanding your associations. You know, start talking about it. Start going to REIs, meetups, looking at Facebook groups, listening to podcasts like Doc Working. I mean, this is where you're going to get these great opportunities to hear people who are not just talking about this stuff, but are actually doing it. And that's a big thing. Those are the first steps. You figure out where you're at, then start asking yourself where you want to go and make sure that you ask yourself why you want to go there. I don't want to just buy a house on some tropical island because I want to visit there and it sounds like a cool idea. I could rent it out. No, what's your why? You got to figure out your why through that too. And now I'm going to start talking about it, expand my associations, start learning about it, researching, and then we need to take action. We need to start actually implementing these things to change this knowledge into wisdom.
Brett, just as an example, can you tell me about the conversation you have with yourself and your wife? You said that you guys are doing this together. That is around your why. What is your why?
Great. And so there's two different conversations there, obviously, with myself and my wife. My wife is absolutely amazing, so humble and so perfect. I'm so blessed to have her in my life. It's simple. She wants a happy, healthy family. And, you know, and even the home we live in can be simple, humble, as long as it's dependable and we are enjoying where we're at. It's so simple. So for her, that's an easy why. For me, I have this drive of this passion, this drive to continuing to get better and better and better and more efficient in everything we do. So there's something that drives me in my why that's further. Ultimately, beyond that passion is back to the family and spending time with my family, spending time with just freedom, the freedom, being able to travel. And, you know, right now we're looking at, we're booking, we're talking about it. Everything it starts with imagination and then it comes fruition by talking about it. But this is the path. This is just what I was talking about with real estate. We're talking about now our trip to meet our team. We've got some team members who are in the Philippines. So we're actually figuring out the path to get there. But the cool part about this is it fulfills my why, because my family gets to go with me. And it's shaped around freedom too. My children are employees of our investment company. So everything is above the line. We're paying ourselves above the line, meaning that the flights, the food, because it's real estate related, it's a business trip. Now, I'm not a CPA, so don't take me on that stuff. This works for us though. So it's filling my why of spending time with my family in that freedom of life.
Well, I think it's a terrific education for your kids as well. And I don't want to get too far down this this path because it's not where we're wanting to head with the whole conversation. But I am curious, since you mentioned it, for someone who's interested and listening, what are your kids able to do as part of the business? What kind of things do you have them doing to be important? Yeah.
It's such a fun conversation because some people I've had heated conversations over this, and it's kind of like, you got to step back and take it easy. Everything's going to be okay. It's not a sweatshop. Everything is fine. These guys will love it. So we live, breathe, eat, sleep real estate. Our life, I mean, these kids have grown up on renovation, on job sites, flipping, picking out staging. They've done so much. The things that stand out to me that bring joy to our life, when we were doing direct mail, anytime that a piece of, look at here, I've got two right here. So recently my daughter and I flew to Memphis, is one of our markets that we're in, and to meet our team in Memphis. And I had thank you notes, and you can see them, hold them up to the camera. This is my daughter drawing on the envelopes, and just those cute little things to be involved on that. Prior to that, when we're doing direct mailing, we would have the kids drawing pictures. And at one point, I actually had them draw the pictures of, you know, we buy houses, any condition, that kind of stuff. And I created templates. I scanned those, put them into our direct mailing fulfillment system, and we were direct mailing the kids' hand-drawn letters for you know, the We Buy Houses. Everything social media is a blast. People just love them in our social media posts. We're posting progress pictures of renovations. There's just so much that, because it is our life, they're 100% included in it and help us grow the business.
Well, I do think that there's a huge opportunity to integrate your family life with your work life, especially when it's this type of work. And I do think, having grown up in helping my mom and her business, I loved it as a kid, getting to even do things like make boxes, like mm-hmm. fold the boxes. I just thought it was the greatest thing. All the different ways that I could be involved. And so for her little shop.
Yep.
So I can imagine that your kids would really gain a lot. And while they're drawing pictures and doing these things to help you out, they're watching and learning and understanding what it is to own a business, how much work is involved in that, and they're watching you make those decisions. So I think it's expanding their horizon. So I'm fascinated by that.
What kid wouldn't want to go to a renovation project and be the first one to put a hammer through a wall? You know, it just the joy and the excitement that my son in particular gets from doing any kind of demo, like when we can kick stuff down, knock it over. Now, the real challenge as a parent then becomes when it's okay, we made this mess. Now we got to clean it up. You know, you don't just get to be the social media guy making pictures and then not be responsible and pick up the mess that you make when you demo, you know?
Absolutely. Well, so now listening to you talk about where you are now, can you tell us about your investment trajectory, like where you started and how you moved into these different types of investments and what your decision-making was along the way?
Yeah. Where I started is easy. I started with nothing. That house that my parents built, actually, they lost it. It was never actually completed. It was so many years that they worked on this house. It was adjustable rate mortgage, and ended up basically having to sell it in a short sale, pretty much foreclosure. And then from there, moving forward, it was, you know, we rented, we were at a place for 1 year, and then we moved and moved. So that's my starting place. And I was actually just starting, I had a conversation with a physician the other day, a physician investor, and we talked about these things that we don't talk about. It's just like that. That's my starting point. And how we progressed into where we're at now, we, as a contractor myself, this was my full-time job. So my capital, I call them capital bubbles, which for physicians, you have high potential earners, you're high earners. So you have those capital bubbles created through your job, whether it's W-2 or your own business. Well, mine was flipping houses. So what we would, you know, flip a house and profit, you know, $10, $20, $30, $50,000. I would just keep rolling that back into the business, buying houses. But I got to a point where I was what I called flipping paper, where we were doing assignments. And that to me was like, wow, I want to do this because I don't even have to take on the risk of opening up walls. I don't have to talk to all these contractors. So these wholesales or these assignments became a way of creating these capital bubbles that allowed me now to either, you know, invest in the business again, or I want to convert those capital bubbles into cash flowing assets, that long-term passive, if there's no such thing as passive income, but passive income, as we call it, in long-term rentals, and we have short-term rentals too.
Okay. And before we go any further, can you explain to us what you mean by wholesale? For someone who's listening who might not have heard that term, what do you mean by that?
What's fascinating, I'm a licensed agent now in a couple of states. My wife is licensed in a state as well, too. And there's so many real estate professionals, so many real estate agents don't even know what that is. It's surprising. So if you think about it, you're going to sell me your house for $100,000. I say, okay, Jen, I want to make this as easy as possible. Here's my purchase and sale agreement. You would like $100,000 for this property. Okay, we both sign this agreement, the purchase sale agreement. In my agreement is actually, where my name is written, it's assignees or heirs, I believe is the actual language, but allows me to assign my rights to another buyer. So what's unique about, and it's most contracts are this way, unless it specifically states this is not assignable. What happens now is I've got a buyer in my network of investors that says, I like Jen's property, and I would actually give you $120,000 for Jen's property. So now I can execute another agreement that's called the assignment of contract agreement. And that agreement is where the fee comes in. So investor says, okay, I want to buy this for $120,000. Now I've gained $20,000 assignment fee to assign that original purchase and sale agreement to now the end buyer. Now I'm out and I've connected the two dots together. I've collected a fee and not a commission. And that's a whole nother conversation with the way that laws and regulations have changed in the last 5 years regarding that.
Okay, thank you. And if anyone is interested in learning more about that, we'll give you some information about how to contact Brett at the end of the call. And there are a lot of resources online as well where you can read about wholesaling as an option. It sounds like you've been through flipping, you've done wholesaling, you've done single family, you've done multifamily. and syndication as well?
No, I've not done syndication yet. I am excited because I also have a podcast. You were a wonderful guest on the podcast, Real Estate Mogul MD, and I get to speak with so many fundraisers, so many syndication companies, and I've learned so much in the last 6 months. I'm excited to make that my next journey. The multifamily commercial buildings that we have currently are mixed-use commercial. They are smaller than the full multi. In my mind, you know, it only takes 5 units to be a multifamily per se in the commercial perspective. In most places, I believe, if not at all. But for me, you know, I'm thinking like 10 to 70 is kind of like that, be that first jump for us. And I'm excited to make that jump into the multifamily. The one thing before we leave wholesaling is I've spoken with quite a few people, physicians particularly, who have not had a good experience with wholesaling. So I just wanted to put that on the table. It is labor intensive. It is capital intensive. I mean, we have a nationwide real estate acquisition company. We were spending 6 figures a month in marketing, doing what we were doing. So wholesaling is not something that you can just pay a guru $5,000 or 10 or 15 or 20 or whatever, and then all of a sudden you're going to start turning these papers into $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. So just beware on that. It's possible, not likely.
Very good tip there. So if I'm a physician listening and I'm interested in working with you, how do you help physicians specifically?
Yeah, and it's going to come down to that first thing where we started about what it is that you're looking for. Physician Wealth Systems, we have a product where we create a turnkey real estate investment company. And this is not just, you know, a turnkey real estate investment property. This is a company. So we're building the company for you, and it's 12 properties in 12 months. And this is, we get after it, right? And we've created these systems to make it as passive as possible. Obviously, this is still going to require the physician's time. The physician maintains 100% of the equity and is building their real estate investment company. Typically, it's companies because of the LLC breakouts that that our clients use.
But okay, wait a second. Okay,
yeah.
I just want to be sure I understand this. So as a physician comes to you and you're going to help them build their own company to acquire 12 properties within 12 months.
Yes.
And you have systems in place that are automated that you've developed over time that help them to be able to successfully do this in a small, relatively saving time. I have not experienced this, so I'm just asking. I'm just trying to understand what you do, but it sounds very interesting. So, okay. If a physician is interested in doing that, what would be the time commitment from the start? What would they be thinking, you know, what would they need to be setting aside in their schedule on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis?
Yep. The first
start it and to continue it.
Yep. And when we, again, there's nothing that's passive, and I'm creating this to be for the physician to be a business owner. And if you've read the book, Cashflow Quadrant, by Robert Kiyosaki, understanding the business owner. We're not buying ourselves another job. We're not self-employed. Now, obviously, there are things that still require time. So we're looking at the first month. We're looking at 8 hours approximately. And a lot of that's going to be the applications, because we implement the BRRRR strategy, Jen, which is buy, renovate, rent, and refinance. And then we're going to repeat that. So in that first month, it's the most labor intensive. We're projecting between 8 hours, 10 hours, somewhere in there. And that's working with one time a week. We're on a Zoom meeting, at least an hour, getting through, and we're taking action every time that we're meeting. And then the second month, it cuts the time about in half. And we'd look at about 4 hours in that second month. Third month, backing down, getting closer to that 2 hours. Ultimately, we're ending up at about 1 hour a month getting this stuff done. And what I say from the get-go is that I hope that we continue to build our relationship. But if you leave me, you will never need me. I want to make sure that I'm setting these systems and processes and procedures up for the physicians to create this business and not just a single property investment.
And are these single family or multifamily? What kind of properties are you helping physicians find, and how do you go about doing that?
Yep, great question. Single family residential is I feel one of the best entry points, and this is something where to scale it is very difficult. And I'm sure that if the listeners haven't heard of hedge funds, we work with different hedge funds, but it to scale, it's a whole different machine. So I feel that an entry point is awesome in the single family respect, because then if you wanted to, depreciate, exchange the 1031 exchange process, it's easier to offload these things because there's more buyers. I mean, we're talking about an asset that anybody can buy, whether it's the old Chuck in the truck to do a flip, whether it's a landlord to do a long-term hold, or the first-time homeowner, or a family looking for a nice, neat, clean, mechanically sound home. That's what we're doing with these properties. So a single family, and we practice economy by scale, meaning that we are locked into a specific market where the numbers make sense. And I can go into so much on the outside-in approach on why this market, why this property, why this area. But we implement our power team in that regard. And that's another way of how we're going to find these. In the past, I've been working on a project for about a year now, and I'm so excited or so close. We're plugged into the MLS, and we're aggregating data from the MLS, and we're pulling it into our system. In our system, we have a specific buy window and a specific investment objective, and we can tie those two things together and plug in basically which properties we want to look at for today. And I always say, I want to put in 5 offers today. So my acquisition team, that's exactly what we're doing. And these offers align with the products that we're supplying for physician wealth systems.
For someone who is interested in getting started investing, do you recommend, first of all, knowing what the volume that you're aiming for is from the beginning? So for example, you're saying that you help someone to invest in 12 properties in 12 months. And you mentioned the BRRRR strategy as well, which for someone who might not have heard about that, the buy, renovate, rent, refinance,
yes.
Repeat, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Nice
so
job.
You're going to take your initial investment money, you're going to buy a property, and then once you buy that property, your part of your investment money is going to be to renovate that property to get it to a point that it can rent. When you renovate it, you're going to improve the value of it. So then you're going to have it rented out so it's producing income, and then you go to a bank and refinance it. When you refinance it, you take your money back out, essentially, right?
Yes. So,
and then you can use that money to buy another property.
Yeah. So, asking me where should somebody start? Well, it's going to come down to capital, time, and team. We're able to build this 12 property portfolio in 12 months because we have the capital, the time, and the team to do it. So if somebody's out there just getting started and wants to pop their first property, it's going to be a little bit different. For that person, I'm going to say start in your neighborhood that you are familiar with. And we're not talking about a scalable solution off the front. So I'm not as much concerned about economics. I'm not as much concerned about job creation, rent increase, all of these things that we look for on a scalable solution. But you're going to know this property. You're going to know this neighborhood. You're going to know the street. Neighborhoods vary by block. And you're going to have probably an easier time building your team from that point too. So we talk a lot about that team that you need to build and that process. But that's kind of a great starting point for someone who's just getting started. And single family residential is the great way. But remember, when you approach this, Jen, you are not buying yourself another job. You have to look at it that way. You have to understand the math so that you can include property management costs, vacancy maintenance, taxes, insurance, all of this stuff, because this needs to be as passive as possible. For me, when I first started, I didn't have capital, but I had time and I had the team. So I was sweat equity learning this stuff. I was fixing the properties up myself. I was managing the properties myself. And I love that path for me because I have the time, the same path that I took through architectural engineering, construction management, is I didn't want to just draw pictures. I wanted to know what I was doing. And I had the time to do that. So the physicians out there do not have the time per se to do something like this. So making sure that we're including all of these things in our equations.
And to your point there, if I understand correctly, you make your money on the front end. So you have to get a good enough deal when you're purchasing to know that you can factor all of this in and you're not factoring it in based on appreciation in the future, because who knows?
Appreciation, we don't even, what I've heard, you know, it's called icing on the cake. For us, it's something we set aside. Rent increase, we know, you know, in the next 15 years, the next 20 years, that typically in our markets, our properties are going to increase by about six figures. And our rents are going to almost double in the next 15, 20 years. But we don't take any of that into account. You have to know the other pieces. The profit is made on the acquisition, but it's not realized until the exit, right? And if you don't know what your property is going to make when you sign the deal, then it's a bad deal.
And speaking of the exit, you mentioned the 1031 exchange. Can you explain a little bit?
Yeah.
Just a very quick definition of that.
Yes. Another reason why I love real estate as an asset class is the generational wealth building potential. And let's just take a single family home for an example. I love single families. I love real estate because we get to force equity into places. And what I call air equity, this idea that we're creating this value out of the air. I'm going to buy, say I bought your property for $100,000. I put $20,000 of renovation into that. I get it appraised for $150,000. So here's that air equity. I've forced $30,000 worth of equity into this property. That's on paper. Obviously, if I was to liquidate, I've got to take some expenses out, but $30,000 of air equity. That's great. So I can hold on to this thing. I can rent it out. And maybe the next 5 years, 10 years, maybe this appreciation thing that's happening is happened, right? Maybe 2%, 3% a year. So I've actually gained a little more of that air equity or that forced equity, right? On top of the forced equity. So I want to cash this out. So instead of paying capital gains, what I can do is maybe I sold this thing for 160 and now I've been depreciating it as well. Straight line depreciation for the 6 years that I've owned it. So I would have to pay capital gains and recapture that depreciation if I were to sell it and not do anything with it. The 1031 exchange allows me to then roll that into the next property like investment, meaning that it's a rental property, right? I can roll that into the next property and not have to pay capital gains and not have to recapture that depreciation. So that's the depreciate exchange. And then we just keep doing this because I can keep kicking the can down the road. And for the listeners, I love doing my air quotes when I'm doing podcasts. I'm doing the air quote. I keep kicking the can down the road and I don't have to recapture the depreciation. I don't have to pay capital gains. So now we've taken this 100, you know, I've got 120 into this property. I've sold it for 160. Say, so now I just keep stepping up really into this depreciate exchange. And then this very unique thing happens. And when I talk about wealth, generational wealth, when we have these properties, then that we allow our children to inherit or somebody to inherit, the cost basis of these properties then steps up at that point on that transfer, and the taxes are never recaptured, right? That you don't pay the capital gains. So this is the depreciate exchange die. So that's where there's the no the recapture of this too. And the 1031, there are stipulations on time. and what kind of property, and you have to have a custodian, typically an attorney who handles this paperwork. You can do it before you buy a new property. You can do it after you buy a new property. You just want to work with the right tax attorney to get that done. And I am not a tax attorney and I'm not a CPA, so don't take my advice. You take this as a little seed, plant it in your soil of your mind and plant that baby and use it.
And I am not a professional real estate investor, but I do enjoy learning about this. And I think from everything I've been told, my DocWorking community really enjoys it as well. So Brett Riggins, thank you so much for coming and talking with me today. I love catching up with you. I love hearing about your experiences and I appreciate you sharing your expertise. How can people reach out to you if they want to learn more and maybe take advantage of some resources that you have available?
Yeah. Hey, great question. Physicianwealthsystems.com is the home base. I love being able to, I guess, being welcomed into the physician world through the podcast, Real Estate Mogul MD. I get the opportunity to speak with syndicators, with physicians who've created their own businesses, physicians who now focus on coaching. So all of those resources are also compiled on physicianwealthsystems.com website. Also on there, you'll see access to the book. I love this book. We're actually going to revise this, How to Get Rich as a Doctor. That resource is on there too. And why we all start with mindset in these discussions is exactly why the beginning of that book talks about mindset. And then we roll into real estate as well too. And on top of that, physicianwealthsystems.com, you can also find this wonderful resource called Real Estate Residency. And for all my physicians out there listening to this, residency is something that we all know, right? That it was a process in our life. The same way with real estate, we should take this one degree pivot in your learning career and not stop learning when you're done with school. Take this small pivot and start learning about something else that you're interested in, whether it's short-term, long-term, multifamily, whatever it may be. Real estate residency is an absolute free resource to start learning. If it is single family residential, this is the what, where, why, and how, all combined and compressed, condensed in the same way that I present it to my clients at Physician Wealth Systems. Because in order for us to get 12 properties in 12 months, we got to be on the same page. We got to have clear expectations and we got to know what we're doing.
Thank you so much, Brett, for providing these tremendous resources for us. I will share the links in the show notes. So if you're listening, please check out the show notes and you can click and learn more about Brett Riggins and what he's doing. And also the Real Estate Mogul MD podcast is another one that you may really enjoy. And I'm so pleased to have this conversation. Look forward to more conversations with you in the future, Brett. Thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jim, for your time. And for all the listeners out there, if you don't or haven't got the chance, please stop by the podcast, whether you're listening on Apple or Spotify, and make sure you leave a review, a 5-star review, because that's what helps Jen, DocWorking, and all of us share the great news, share the great experience, and just keep building community with everybody and sharing the opportunities.
Yes, thank you so much for that. And thank you for listening to DocWorking, the Whole Physician Podcast.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining us today. Your support means the world to us. And please don't forget to explore our virtual home at docworking.com, where you'll find resources carefully curated to propel you toward the destination you've always aspired to reach, both in your personal journey and in your meaningful career. It's time to take the leap and gain the tools and support to fully access the power of you. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on DocWorking, the Whole Physician Podcast.